We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome back to our initial bowl edition of In the Trenches. We're going to get a look at Michigan versus Alabama in the Citrus Bowl and really break down a number of the other bowl games that the Big Ten has coming up here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
That education, the things you learn, the relationships you make, connections you make. The Michigan has the largest alumni network in the world, you know, so like being able to graduate and be a part of that, you know, association, man, I mean, it's just priceless.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. We are excited to be talking about the matchup that Michigan has in the Citrus Bowl, but before you do that, I want to thank you guys for listening all season long. If you continue to download this, because we're going to bring you weekly editions all the way through the new year, make sure you like, subscribe, review, let us know what you like, what you don't like. If you have questions, you can hit us on the reviews. You can also hit me on Twitter at JohnJansen77. That's J-O-N, Jansen77. Love to hear from you guys, as always. But we got a lot to get to today. The bowl predictions are out. But before we get there, my partner, Brian Bush, basketball, still ranked number 5 in the country. What have you seen? I know that you were in Louisville. You saw that game firsthand, and it's a little bit of a step back, but a huge step forward because we didn't really think we would be here this early in Juwan Howard's tenure.
No, 8-1 through 9 games. This is coming out Wednesday morning, so the team will play Wednesday night at Illinois, which is a difficult road game. But when you looked at the start of the season, you looked at this portion of the schedule, and you said, man, you're going to face Iowa State, and then probably two other good opponents in the Bahamas. Then you're going to go to Louisville. Then you have back-to-back Big Ten games, and then you host Oregon. That's a really tough stretch for any coach. But for it to be a first-year head coach with all the changes that needed to happen with all the new roles that these players are embracing, and to be 8-1, a chance to be 9, 10, maybe even 11-1 heading into the Christmas time stretch where they get a chance to get away a little bit. Nothing but optimism, in my opinion, on what I've seen. Yeah, the Louisville game was rough, but Louisville's the number one team in the nation for good reason.
And number one, the only number one team in the nation to keep that spot 2 weeks in a row so far.
Cool. Yeah,
exactly. And so I guess I want to ask you this question about Michigan basketball. We saw the win against North Carolina. We saw the win against Gonzaga. And then we saw the loss to Louisville. So we've had a chance to look and see how Juwan Howard handles some of the success. What was he like, and what was it like after the Louisville game?
I was impressed because, you know, I go into the locker room after the game to get my post-game interview with Coach Howard. And obviously, you're never happy when you lose. But coaches embrace that opportunity, especially early on in the season. And when he went to meet with the team, I didn't listen to the actual message, but I saw him walk out of his coach's office and into the area where he was addressing his team after that game. He had a smile on his face. Now, it wasn't a, hey, you know, we're awesome, this is going to be fine. There were things to work on, but it was an uplifting one. It was a, hey, listen, this is a really tough place to play. And nothing fell for them that night. And it was partly because of what Louisville did. But they scored 43 points and they weren't really out of it until 4 minutes left, which shows that they didn't let the offensive struggles dictate what they did on the defensive end against a really good team in a hostile environment. Now, if you get to 3-4 losses in a row at some point in the season, maybe it's not that way. But to me, I think Juwan and this entire team realized, yeah, Louisville was tough, but think about all we had accomplished before and all we can still work on. And we're here already. I was really impressed with how he handled it. And with the response on Friday at Iowa, at home against Iowa, 100 plus points for the first time against a power conference team this century.
Well, and I was going to ask you that. Is that 100 point performance with the new style of offense that Juwan Howard brought to Ann Arbor, is that more likely to happen? Is it going to be a more frequent thing?
I don't know if triple digits will. Iowa has always been a good offense, bad defense, Big Ten team. I mean, they're outside the top 100 in defense, which they're one of only a couple teams in the Big Ten who are that way. I'm not expecting we're going to see 100 points regularly. But what I was even more impressed about was no one had more than 18.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so
rare. There
were
six or seven guys in double digits, weren't there?
Yeah, everybody scored at least 2 points. You had, I think, seven guys with eight or more, six in double figures. And it was, you know, Franz Wagner was the leader. He has found his stroke a little bit after the injury to start the season. So for me, yeah, they might not put up 100-plus a ton, but their ability to spread it out, to get other guys involved, to me, that's what's going to be the staying power, to where if you can get that and you score 75, 80 points a game, you're going to have your success in the Big Ten.
So as most people know, we don't always cover the positive in this podcast. And so on the negative side in that Iowa game, Luka Garza had, 44? And so is there any concern there?
Not really, because John Teske was battling some foul trouble. And, you know, Garza is going to get his. They are able to post up. Garza is a really good player. He's put up numbers against Michigan in the past. But what they were able to do against everybody else, they were shooting around 40% for a team that they're going to get their points. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly something of note. But Teske was in some foul trouble. Colin Castleton had to stitch up his lip because he took a shot in the first half, so he wasn't on the floor. So you were kind of a little bit pushed back in your depth, and guys like Brandon Johns and Austin Davis played well. So it's certainly noteworthy when they go to Iowa next month. You can't give up 44 because the role players are going to play better. To me, if you're trying to find things to work on and improve, they're still turning the ball over more than I thought they would at this stage. You figured more because of the up-tempo style of offense. But I do think that's noteworthy that they'll need to clean up. Defensively is still solid, but I think they still have some improvement to go. I think, will that type of continuity carry over on the road? We'll see it against Illinois this week. We'll see it when they go to Michigan State after the turn of the calendar, because you can get away with losing at Louisville on the road. That's fine. But if you're going to win a Big Ten championship, you have to win games like this on the road. And it starts with Illinois, a team that is talented, but Michigan should win that game.
They are. And Brad Underwood, when we went down to Champaign, I had a chance to talk to him. And I do think he's got that program going in the right direction with some of the young recruits and Georgie B. inside. I can't wait to hear Brian Bush.
Bashanishvili.
Say his name in the play-by-play for basketball.
Let's just say when I was filling in last year, I wasn't bummed we didn't see Illinois.
But I tell you what, it's still football season, so enough of this basketball talk.
I had you like 6 minutes there. That was crazy.
7 from 77. Let's get on to some football talk.
All right, let's do it. Number one, your reaction to the bowl and the matchup with Alabama when it came out on Sunday was?
I'm excited. And so there were a number of different scenarios from, you know, the Gator Bowl to the Holiday Bowl, Citrus Bowl. I mean, there were just a number of scenarios that everybody's floating around. And if anybody has followed college football long enough, and they know, especially now we're in this playoff system, there are predictions that come out, and every week they change in terms of what bowl you're going to. I wasn't necessarily excited about going to the Gator. I was excited about going to the Holiday Bowl because in Southern California, you don't get any better weather than that. But going to Orlando to play in the Citrus Bowl against Alabama, you got two blue blood programs, Michigan and Alabama. And over the last 5 years since we've been in this college football playoff era, Alabama's been in the playoffs. They do not lose that mystique. They do not lose. Nick Saban's still there. They are still loaded with talent. They just didn't come away with enough wins this year to get in that top four. So I'm excited for Michigan to be tested and see where this team stacks up because, you know, we'll get a chance to look forward to next year.
Number two, people, I think, are on various sides of the fence when it comes to how important non-college football playoff games and even non-New Year's Six bowl games are. But just how big would a bowl win over Alabama be for this team, not just for this season, but looking ahead to next year and beyond?
Oh, I think it's huge because Alabama, like we mentioned just before, they are a playoff team. And I think going into this season, everybody thought it was Alabama, Clemson, and then everybody else. Alabama's not in the college football playoffs, but they're still a great team. And we'll talk about some of their injury situations. Obviously, Tua Tagovailoa won't be there. But, you know, Mac Jones has stepped in and played extremely well. This is a very talented team. The receivers, you know, everybody wants to talk about the talent and the skill and the speed. This is a chance for Michigan to measure up against some of the best receivers. They've got three or four guys at that receiver position that are going to be high draft picks playing on Sunday. And as we get closer to the game, we'll obviously get a feel for who's going to play, who's not. And that's another interesting scenario to watch play out.
Yeah.
Nick Saban has not been in this situation.
No doubt. I mean, you talk about the motivational aspect, and I know it's been a common discussion from your perspective. For number three today, there's going to be discussion on both sides of the ball, who will play, who will not. I know you don't understand why someone would sit out a bowl game. I know you don't like that, and I'm with you on it. I think bowl games, it's another chance to prove yourself. It's another chance to go out there. But I'd have to imagine that compared to maybe some of the other teams that we saw as possibilities for Michigan, if you're a bowl eligible, or if you're a draft eligible player looking at a bowl matchup and you see Alabama on that other side, I feel like in a lot of ways, outside of injury, there's only things you can really gain from this and improve your draft stock facing off against a team like this, whether or not they have their full strength of players.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, there's – I don't necessarily think – we've already – and we're going to get a chance to talk to Josh Uche a little bit later. So far, he's the only one that's declared for the NFL to forgo his senior year. But when you look at the players that we have, if there's anybody going to leave early or for the seniors that are going to be out of eligibility, this is a resume builder. This is an opportunity. Put aside the outcome of the game. This is a chance for LeVert Hill to cover Jerry Jeudy. This is an opportunity for Vincent Gray, a young corner, for Ambry Thomas, for Dax Hill, to play against one of the best receiving cores they may ever see it in the college level. It's also an opportunity for Michigan's offensive line to play against a good SEC front. And you know, we'll get into the matchups, you know, in later weeks when we get closer to the game. But this is one of those games where if you plant your flag and you play well, you could look at this one as a springboard for next year and possible preseason All-American, all that stuff. But it's also one that NFL scouts will look at because, like I said, there's going to be a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and it's all about the matchups.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Number four on today's 7 from 77, you alluded to the quarterback position. Of course, Tua Tagovailoa, he's out for this game. We saw a little bit of Mac Jones to finish the season in the Iron Bowl. He bounced back from a little bit of a tough start, 26 of 39, 335, 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions through the air. What stood out to you about his performance and looking at what he potentially could cause issues for with Michigan?
Well, what I saw from him was a young quarterback getting, you know, still getting his feet underneath him. He's got the arm. He's got the knowledge. He's got all of the tools. Now it's a matter of going out there and performing. And I think early in that game, and I forget who they played before that, but, you know, when
it
you
was
watch
one of those FCS.
Yeah, when you watch game. Him play. It's not like watching a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, and it's probably unfair to compare him to him, but Tua had, you know, what was it, 18, 19 starts, and when you have that experience and you have that relationship with your receivers, you tend to hit guys in stride a little bit more, and you're throwing balls before wide receivers come open because you trust, you know where they're going to be. For Mac Jones, it was a matter of continuing to build that trust because he's so fresh at that position in regards to playing when in games that matter. So what I saw from him was he was maybe a half second late in making some of those throws. Instead of hitting guys on stride, maybe, you know, they had to either stretch out or they had to slow down. It's not that they were off the mark. They were still where they were supposed to be. But when you're throwing to a receiver who's not yet open, there's some trepidation. And from that quarterback position and whoever that quarterback is, until you develop that trust that they're going to be there. And it was that just a little bit of hesitancy that I saw. I expect with 15 extra practices, looking at the film against Auburn, Mac Jones is going to be right where he needs to be when he plays Michigan.
Number five, bouncing outside of the Michigan-Alabama matchup a little bit. In your eyes, did the College Football Playoff Committee get it right? I think the four teams, I don't know who you could have put in there other than those four, but did they get the order correct?
I think they did, and the debate's going to be should have Ohio State dropped from 1-2, LSU jump them. When you look at the LSU-Georgia game, the SEC championship game, Georgia was a very good team. They had one bad loss. That was to South Carolina earlier in the season. LSU dominated that game from start to finish. And the question going into that game was their defense going to be a liability? When you look at all of the other teams, whether it is Ohio State, Clemson, not so much Oklahoma, but they're still up there, those two teams are top of the heap in terms of points allowed per game. Defensive statistics, LSU was right around 22. And so Clemson and Ohio State are right around 10 points per game that they allow. When you take a look at what they were doing and how they were working through it, for LSU, they had been banged up all season. They got a number of players back, and now all of a sudden you're looking at they only give up 10 points to Georgia. Now, Georgia's not a powerhouse offense. Jake Fromm didn't have his number one or number two wide receivers to throw the ball to. You know, DeAndre Swift is a good running back, but he's not the elite running back. So they did a really good job, and I think, you know, looking at playing in the SEC championship game, dominating from start to finish, because Ohio State struggled a little bit against Wisconsin, and the argument for Ohio State staying at the number one spot was it's hard to beat a team twice. They've got film, they make adjustments, but Ohio State had that same film, had the opportunity to make the same adjustments. They trailed into the third quarter, eventually won 34-21, but I think it was a legitimate jump for LSU to be number one, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, and you know that all-important number one spot means LSU plays Oklahoma. And that's a much different game than Ohio State playing Clemson. And don't think the irony was lost on anybody that it's in the Fiesta Bowl. Last time this matchup happened, it was Clemson 31, Ohio State nothing.
By the way, could you imagine if we were in the BCS era and you had undefeated 13-0 reigning national champion Clemson?
Yeah.
And it would have been probably no debate at all that they wouldn't have played for the national championship.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I'm not saying down from Clemson, but
I think the computers might have had something to say about
that's
that.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
Because Clemson, when you look at their record, and so it's always the strength of schedule is what people talk about. And, you know, Texas A&M, they started in the second game 24-10, but the rest of their opponents, I mean, they put up 45 on Florida State, 45 on Louisville, 59 on BC, you know, 55 on NC State. Wake, who everybody thought Wake was going to be their biggest opponent, 52-3.
But could you have really used that schedule as an argument to upend LSU or Ohio State? Like, I get the computers is a great point, but in terms of polling, I don't think there would have been much debate at all, as it would have been LSU and Ohio State, whether they were one or two in the polling. Regardless, it's so great that we actually get to see that. This is the second straight year we've seen 3-13-0 teams. Well, Notre Dame was 12-0 last year. But, I mean, if we were in that one
it would
game.
Have been very interesting and
a
lot of debate.
More politicking.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, here's the other thing to think about in regards to this Clemson team. They're 28-0.
Oh, they could absolutely win the national championship. Absolutely.
Most people, and I said this earlier on in the week on a show, I think that most people don't understand how good Clemson is right now because they haven't seen them. There has been absolutely nothing compelling about their schedule or about, you know, there's been other than the North Carolina game, which people didn't really tune into until the end of the fourth quarter because everybody's news alerts went off. Hey, Clemson's, you know, they're in a tight game with North Carolina. Other than that, they have absolutely blown everybody out. It hasn't even been close.
Yeah.
So nobody's watched them.
All right, John, number six, staying national here, your Heisman top five would be what?
Joe Burrow and everybody else. You know, you could talk about Justin Fields, J.K. Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor, Chase Young, you know, Jalen Hurts, maybe Chuba Hubbard out at Oklahoma State. You know, they had great seasons, but I think we're looking at a possible historic Heisman vote. This may be the widest margin that anybody has won the Heisman by because he has been so dominant and so impressive from week one until week 13.
Curious, everybody talks about how well he has indoctrinated himself to that program, to his teammates. What is it about him that you see from afar that has allowed him to do that? Because, I mean, LSU 2 years ago was not an up-tempo, high-octane passing offense, and now it feels like they've been doing it for two decades.
Well, and that's the impressive part because they brought in Joe Brady, who was a quarterback coach at the New Orleans Saints. They brought him in to be the passing game coordinator and really bring this high-powered offense. So to have him install a new offense and – you know, Joe Burrow, at the beginning of the year, I heard an interview that he was doing when he looked at the playbook. He looked at the first page and he said, oh, that's new, and kept going, you know, page 10, page 11, page 12. It was completely new to a quarterback, to an offense, to a whole system. To be able to operate at that level, I think, is extremely impressive. And the knowledge that Joe Burrow plays with, the football awareness, when to escape the pocket, picking up key first downs with his legs. When you compare him to a Justin Fields or even a Trevor Lawrence, you don't think mobile quarterback, but he is extremely mobile, and it's the decisions that he makes, when to slide, when to try and pick up that first down, when to get out of bounds. I think he's done a tremendous job, and it all goes to the leadership that he is, the leader that he is, and the leadership he provides that team and that offense from being a senior.
And lastly, number seven, some sad news to talk about. Michigan legend Bump Elliott, a Big Ten champion, a Rose Bowl champion as a player and as a coach, he passed away over the weekend. If you write the history of University of Michigan football, he is no question a big part of that, John. And obviously, it's a sad loss for the entire Michigan family.
It is. And when you talk about Michigan football history, obviously, you know, his name comes up, and you can't not think about the backfield that he was in with Bob Chappius, and you know, coached by Fritz Kreisler, the 1947 national championship team. And I feel a little kinship with them because over the last, 72 years, there's been two national champions. And a lot of people, they called them the Mad Magicians. And a lot of people still feel, and I'm not going to argue this point, that was the greatest Michigan football team of all time. And Bump was a good individual, not a good individual, a great individual. I had a chance to meet him the last time we went to Iowa because he went on from being the Michigan coach that really built that 1969 team to a great career at the University of Iowa as the athletic director. So it's a sad loss for all of college athletics, but especially for the Big Ten and for Michigan football.
All right. Before we get to Josh Uche, our bacon fact, it's really just a quote that I want to make a fact. Jim Gaffigan one time said, "Bacon's the best. Even the frying of bacon sounds like applause." That should be like in the definition of bacon. It's absolutely, it kind of does.
Yes, it does. What a great sound. What a great smell. And then it all ends with a great taste.
Mm, absolutely.
Can't beat it. But I tell you what, before we get to fourth and short, I want everybody to enjoy the opportunity to listen to Josh Uche as we get a chance to talk to him about preparation for the bowl game and what's ahead for him. Well, we want to welcome in Josh Uche to the podcast. Josh, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've started bowl preparation. We found out that Michigan will be playing Alabama. What was your reaction when you heard we were going to the Citrus Bowl playing against Alabama?
I mean, I was excited, man, just growing up always playing with them on NCAA and just, you know, all the great players that have came out of Bama that I've looked up to, you know, to have an opportunity to play them. Not everyone gets the chance to play them, especially us coming from the Big Ten. So, you know, I was just really excited.
What's this mean for, because you mentioned the Big Ten playing the SEC team. What's this mean, not just for Michigan, but for the conference of the Big Ten to play Alabama, who's been in the college football playoffs 5 years? This is the first time they've been out.
I mean, it's a big opportunity, you know, to represent the Big Ten, you know, playing such a great rival in Alabama and just being able to showcase our talents and showing that we can match them step for step in terms of competition.
Now, I want to ask you, because you came out on social media shortly after the end of the season and you made the declaration that you're going to forego your last year of eligibility to go to the NFL. First of all, congratulations on that decision. And second, how tough is it making that decision?
I mean, it's always tough just because of the bonds you've built here and, you know, the camaraderie between your teammates and, you know, just there's just a lot of ifs, like if I come back, then this could possibly happen, you know, just a lot of what if factors. And, you know, it's just hard just, you know, knowing that the guys that I've come to that have become my brothers, you know, just making a decision to leave them, you know, wasn't an easy one. And especially the coaches and, you know, just getting into such a routine around campus and stuff like that. And, you know, stepping into a new world, you know, it was a hard decision, but, you know, I feel like it's the right one.
What goes into making a decision like that? I'm sure it's family, it's coaches, it's friends, but how'd you come to this decision?
It's just a lot of praying, a lot, doing a lot of prayer, you know, talking to my family and, you know, coaches and just, you know, as the season went on, seeing how things were going also, you know. So, I mean, just all of that combined, you know, came into this final decision.
In the Indiana game, I think it was third or fourth quarter, you had to be you weren't helped off the field, but I know it looked like there was an injury. You were able to come back, but what goes through your mind like that when you know you're going to have this opportunity, but you're in that situation? Is there anything that enters your mind while that's going on?
I mean, honestly, I didn't really think about it. I was just more concerned with coming back in a game. Like, you know, I wasn't really thinking about, oh man, you know, NFL or whatever. I was just thinking like, man, if they call something where I'm in, you know, coach needs me, you know, that's the first thing that went in my head, you know. So, I mean, it's a tricky game because once you start, you know, walking down that path of what ifs, like, you can't play football scared, you know, because, like, growing up, I learned you play football scared, that's how you get hurt. So you got to go out there, you know. I pray a lot, you know, just, you know, stay on my toes. And I like being the one that attacks, you know, because that's being the one that's always on guard, that's how you prevent, you know, certain types of injuries, you know.
How much has, you mentioned this a couple of times now about, you pray a lot. How much has your faith helped you through this period of your life where you come in as a freshman, things a lot of unknown, a lot of new situations carried you through to this point?
I mean, man, I couldn't, you know, just growing up, everyone has the dream of playing in the NFL and stuff like that. But, like, you know, the way God is just used me, I mean, I could have never imagined it, anything happening the way it's happened, you know, coming in as a freshman, you know, playing four games and, you know, doing okay, redshirting in sophomore year, you know, I started thinking maybe, man, I don't fit this system, and then starting to have my doubts and should I transfer, should I do this, you know, just questioning and just I started leaning more and more on prayer, and then, you know, it just everything just transformed. You know, I just kept praying, kept working hard. Just like something was telling me there was going to be a breakthrough. And, you know, just, you know, God's guided me the entire way. I mean, I couldn't even sit here and explain how things have panned out. You know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be doing any of this stuff right now, you know. So
having made this decision, will you still be able to graduate?
Yeah, I'll be graduating in May.
How important is that for you to be able to graduate, and then no matter at any point in the rest of your life, you're going to be able to look on a wall and say, I've got a diploma from the University of Michigan?
I mean, that's one of the main reasons why I came here, man. I mean, to be able to go out into the world and say that I'm a Michigan man, I mean, that's priceless. You know, like that confidence and just saying that right now just feels so good, you know. And that education, football isn't forever. Everyone knows that, you know. NFL, some people say it stands for not for long, but that education, the things you learn, the relationships you make, connections you make, the Michigan has the largest alumni network in the world, you know. So like being able to graduate and be a part of that, you know, association, man, I mean, it's just priceless.
What's this time of the season like? Because regular season's over, we know who we're going to play, but you haven't yet started practice. What's a week like this like in the life of a student athlete?
I mean, honestly, I was watching the Big Ten championship, and I was mad, you know, irritated, and a little, you know, all the championships, I was just kind of jealous, just seeing those guys get another opportunity to showcase their skills and stuff like that. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, I just started thinking, like, man, I wish I had that opportunity, you know, stuff like that, you know. So it's a little frustration, but then you gotta push past that. You know, I'm so happy we got to find out who we play now, because now we could get back on track in terms of preparing for for Alabama. And also you got finals on top of that. Then you got workouts on top of that. So, I mean, it's a lot, you know, but before the announcements came out about who we're playing, it was just kind of, you know, kind of boring, kind of frustrating, you know, but now it's picking up again.
Yeah, the announcement helped turn the page.
Yeah, it helped a lot. So,
bowl practices, you get 15 of them, and some of those will be here at Schembechler Hall. Some of those will be down in Florida preparing for the game. What are bowl practices like, and are they any different than they are during the regular season?
I mean, definitely. My freshman, sophomore year, and junior year, the bowl practices is like another camp. You know, especially it's very critical for the young guys, because that's where they can start developing those skills, you know, getting that attention and coaching that they weren't necessarily able to get during the season, since the coaches were, you know, bogged down with, you know, game planning and stuff, you know. But it's a very critical moment for the younger guys, also the older guys, to just refine their techniques and stuff like that, just work on the little things and, you know, just, you know, make everything crisp. It's like another fall camp, pretty much.
Now that you made that decision that this bowl game is going to be your last game in the maize and blue and the winged helmet, have any of what's the emotions been like? Anything hit you so far?
I mean, it's just, it hasn't hit me yet necessarily. I mean, you know, it's just, it hit me a little bit because, you know, me and Khalid, you know, we're roommates. Me, Khalid, Chris Evans, and Nick Eubanks, we're all roommates, and it's like, we just have been up like countless nights just talking about this, like just constantly talking about it. And it's like we came back home the other day and we're like, man, it's here. It's almost here, you know, and it's just crazy to think, you know. But I feel like after that, you know, the last game, you know, everything goes well, God willing, you know, it's going to hit me hard.
Well, and you mentioned the bonds that you form from teammates. You mentioned that one of your roommates is Chris Evans. What it feel like? How happy are you that he's going to be able to be back in the Michigan program, back at school, and, you know, we're going to see him come spring football?
I mean, it's like people just don't understand how hard it is to go through what he went through and still be able to make it out of that and come back. I mean, he was painting houses. He has his own little football program. Like, it's actually a big-time program. All the kids in Ann Arbor go to it. He's so involved in the community. He was just doing so much things while he wasn't in school to just keep himself busy and, you know, and involved. And he was working like three jobs, and he'd come home exhausted, and, you know, to see it pay off and him get another opportunity, I couldn't be any happier. And the team, you know, we need him. You know, we need Chris. He's a dynamic player, and, you know, I'm just so happy for him, man. I'm happy for my brother.
Well, congratulations on your decision, and we look forward to seeing you in the bowl game. We get one more chance to watch Josh Uche, and we're excited about that. So, and also congratulations on the eventual graduation in May.
Thank you.
That was Josh Uche, and always great to sit down and talk to the Swiss Army knife of the defense, as Don Brown likes to call him. But up next, fourth and short.
Yeah, John, let's get into it. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the broad strokes look of college football outside of Michigan and Alabama. Give me your top three bowl games other than, of course, Michigan and Alabama. And I'm not going to let you pick the playoff games either, because both those are going to be good. But give fans a reason to watch some other stuff other than just the fact that it's football.
Well, this will always be my number one watch, no matter who is in it. It will be the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. It will pit Oregon versus Wisconsin. I think this is a great matchup.
I do too.
When you think about Pac-12 teams, you don't necessarily think physical. You don't think big. This is an Oregon offensive line, a defensive line that is big, is physical. I know I've shared this before on the podcast, but I talked to Holly Rowe, sideline reporter for ESPN, a few weeks ago, and she was at one of the Oregon games, and she said that she was almost shocked as to how physical this front for both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively, is for Oregon. So I'm excited to see that matchup, because we know what Wisconsin is, and it's the last chance that we get to see. We haven't heard officially, but it will be the last chance that we get to watch Jonathan Taylor, who is one of the best running backs to ever play in college football.
So you got that one. I'd throw in Washington and Boise State. That's a pretty awesome storyline with Chris Peterson stepping down. He's facing his former team. That's really cool. I'm interested, what will Memphis look like against Penn State? That could be a game with a lot of points in the Cotton Bowl. I think that's a really interesting matchup.
There's two other teams in the Big Ten I'm excited to see. And obviously, I'll watch all of the Big Ten teams. I'll probably watch all of the bowl games. But Illinois. Going bowling for the first time, playing Cal in the Red Box Bowl. I think we could see a big step for this program in regards to the extra time. We heard Josh Uche talk about bowl practices and how important it is for the young guys to get extra reps and prep for the bowl game. It's basically an extra spring ball that these teams get. In Indiana, Tom Allen just got the contract extension. They're going to play Tennessee in the Gator Bowl. So I'm excited to see them go bowling for the first time in the Tom Allen era. And it's just, you know, he's a great guy. I think he's a terrific coach. I'm glad he's in the Big Ten.
Got the extension.
So a lot to look forward to for both those programs.
I'll also throw in Minnesota-Auburn. That's a chance for Minnesota to bounce back very quickly after what was a very high and then a very quick drop. We're talking about them as a potential playoff team if they pulled the upset against Ohio State. Never got the chance, not even in the New Year's Six. So that's something to watch, too.
It is. And I think what their final ranking was, what was it, 18?
Yeah.
And so it's an opportunity for them to, you know, right something that they think is wrong. You know, going into that Penn State game, nobody was giving them much of a chance, myself included. They were, you know, undefeated but still ranked in double digits. They worked themselves up. Then they finished, obviously, with two losses and didn't finish the season the way they started it. But it's a chance for P.J. Fleck and this Minnesota program to, you know, say, hey, we can compete with some of the best teams in the country.
So that's some of this year's bowl game selection. Fourth and short number two. Give me your favorite bowl memory, not associated with the game, because it's such a special experience. Michigan this year will head down to Orlando shortly after Christmas and get to spend several days down there. So what do you got for your top memory from your bowl trips?
Most people won't be surprised. It all revolves around the trip to the Rose Bowl.
Sure.
I remember, you know, stepping into the Rose Bowl for the first time. Obviously, every second of the game, it just is, it's such a historic venue. And so many great moments, and it's been such a great moment in Michigan football history. And you think the coaches that have coached in that game, the players that have played in it, and what it means. We already talked about, the 1947 team going out there. I think they beat Southern Cal to win the national championship eventually, January 1, 1948.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the one thing that I remember from that season. We used to, at the end of summer conditioning, everybody would get together, whole football team, and Mike Gittleson, our strength and conditioning coach, because we were all, you know, at the best shape of our lives. And he would take a picture when we would all, you know, a team photo. We would all be doing something stupid, right? We'd be flexing, our shirts were off, and, you know, some of us should have still had our shirts on. But it was a picture to show at the end of summer where we were, what we were doing. And I never asked him about that picture until I think it was my junior year, the year before we went to the Rose Bowl. And he said, well, we're going to take, if we ever get there, we're going to take a picture on the beach in Southern California. And then I'm going to give you guys the preseason picture and the postseason picture. And so we get down there, and I couldn't wait for that opportunity. We got down on the beach. Everybody took their shirts off. And we all did something stupid. And we've got that as a team picture, the preseason one and the one on the beach down in Southern California getting ready for the Rose Bowl. Just that the memories that brings back, because in that picture, you've got everybody's personality. And football players are not short on personality. And so it's another look back to that team and that year where I just get a chance to look at it and say, you know, Jeremy Tooman, Mark Campbell, Brian Greasy, Charles Woodson, Tom Brady. I mean, they're just some great names in that picture, but it's all, you know, 100-plus guys that you can go down and you remember something about them and about their personality. Yeah, it just was a great moment for me.
That's really cool. Number three on today's 7 from 77, just a few quick hitters on some of the new head coaches.
Brian, we're on fourth and short.
Not
7 from 77. Wow. We've done that. Fourth and short.
I'm in that offseason.
We're in short yardage and goal line when it matters most. Let's go. Focus.
Number three on fourth and short for Mr. Jansen.
Yeah, our fourth attempt at fourth and short means our O-line isn't doing the job.
Just slowly, yeah, methodically walking down, mm-hmm, the field. Quick hitters on new head coaches. We talked about Greg Schiano to Rutgers. He had his introductory press conference between our podcasts here. Listen, I don't know if he's going to be able to get it anywhere close to where they had it in the Big East, but he was the only guy that they could have gotten out of this and said, he's got a shot.
Well, and that's what the alumni wanted, that's what the boosters wanted, and that's what they've got. So, you know, he got his contract, he got some assurances that they're going to work on their facilities, and that's really what it comes down to, yep, for them to take the next step. They're going to always, you know, unlike the Big East, in the Big Ten East, you're going to have to face Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, now Indiana, Maryland with Mike Locksley. Yep. I mean, it is already the toughest division in college football, and it's only getting harder. So for Rutgers to take that next step forward, doesn't mean they can't, but I think they have to understand where reality is. You know, is getting to 4 wins, is getting 5 or 6 wins to bowl eligible, is that the goal? And if that's the goal, I think that's attainable. Championships, I'm not sure that's going to happen in any time in the near future or the next decade, but if they can get back on the right path, and I've talked about this before, we've seen other programs make a turnaround in regards to, like, Sonny Dykes at SMU. If they can get to the transfer portal and get some veteran guys and then start recruiting, and you know, he's in a great area to recruit, New Jersey, a lot of talent that comes out of there. If he can dip down and beat Mike Locksley to some talent in the DMV area there outside of D.C., you know, he's got a chance to make a difference.
Yeah, if they have the similar trajectory to what we've seen from Illinois, I think that would be a huge success for Rutgers in the other division. Interesting, we talked about the Las Vegas Bowl. So Chris Peterson steps down. Jimmy Lake, who's on their staff, the defensive coordinator, he steps in. That's interesting for Michigan because week one next season is out there in Seattle.
It is, and this is an interesting one because Coach Pete is one of the game's best coaches.
Yes, he is.
He had a great record and terrific resume coming out of Boise State. He goes up to Washington, gets him in the college football playoffs, has, you know, does a great job up there. And I was shocked. And I talked to Kyle Whittingham, the Utah coach, a couple of days after Coach Pete decided to step down, and asked him the same thing. I'm like, you know, were you surprised? And he said, I'm shocked. And he goes, you know, it's just there's a lot of pressure involved in this job, and Coach Pete wants to step away. But I think everybody believes this, and Coach Whittingham said the same thing. He's going to be back. He's just too good of a coach, and I hope he's back. That's probably all of us saying we hope that he's back in college football.
Yeah, college football is better with him in it. Mike Norvell from Memphis to Florida State. Based on how that process went, I don't know if they could have done much better than him.
Yeah, it's an awkward process when you fire a coach a year and a half into his tenure, yeah. Mid-season. You know, you're going to have the job that he has there is to repair a lot of the relationships in the locker room because there's going to be some trust issues as to between the players that are there, if they're sophomores or juniors, trying to get them not to enter the transfer portal because they've recruited well. Whether it's Jimbo Fisher or Willie Taggart, they've done a great job. They've had top 20 recruiting classes, some top 10 recruiting classes. So the talent is there, but he's going to have to go in there and really mend some fences and then start looking at how do I put this and piece it together.
And lastly, the Lane train going to Oxford. I mean, did you see the FAU Twitter account? It was at like 3:30. Check out all the pictures from our championship. 3:38.
Yeah.
There will be a national search beginning.
Well, you know,
he's Lane going to Kiffin, Ole Miss, by the way.
Yeah, he's going to Ole Miss. And it'll be interesting because there's a very interesting player at Ole Miss, and that's John Rhys Plumlee.
Yeah.
The freshman quarterback who, you know, Rich Rod, who we all are very familiar with, was the offensive coordinator down there. And developed a tremendous game plan to face LSU. John Rhys Plumlee had over 200 yards rushing from the quarterback position. They put over 400 yards rushing on LSU, which is what started the conversation about LSU's defense. I'm interested to see what Lane Kiffin can do with a young talent like that. Now, let's not forget, it's still in the SEC West, and it's a very tough division to go from where Ole Miss is right now back to prominence or to competitiveness, but we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Lastly, on fourth and short, I like to wrap things up with fun. I've got a would you rather question. I ran out of list ideas, so we'll try this one. Would you rather wake up in the middle of an unknown desert or wake up in a rowboat on an unknown body of water?
Oh, I'll take the rowboat. As long as I got a fishing pole.
No, you don't get to just invent supplies.
I get to invent supplies in this. Would I rather? Heck yeah, I'd rather go fishing than wake up some random island.
In that unknown desert, there's just a water cooler there for you. No.
Well, yeah, sure, maybe, yeah, a cooler.
Couple of beers?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay.
I, if this is a mythical situation, I'm going to make it a mythical fishing pole.
Well, you're being your mythical best. Good for you.
Well, with that, I will segue to the end of In the Trenches, and you know what, stay tuned because we're going to have a lot more on the breakdown of this matchup between Alabama and Michigan in the Citrus Bowl. We'll have more player reaction and conversations, as well as a couple of coaches coming up before we go down to Orlando to take on the Alabama Crimson Tide. We've got a lot more to get to in the coming weeks before we get to Christmas on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.